Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome back or welcome to the Building Efficiency Podcast presented by Nenni & Associates. I'm your host, Jim Schaefer. Now, if this is your first time tuning in, Nenni & Associates is an executive search firm focused on the building efficiency industry, hence why we named the podcast the way that we did. And simply put, we help our clients find the right talent. Each week, we sit down with leaders from the industry to discuss their backgrounds, how they got started, and where they see the industry heading. We also get to know our guests and find out what drives them to be successful. And on today's episode, episode 111, we sit down with David Diaz from Walker Reed Strategies. David and I connected last year at the NAESCO conference, and it seemed like a natural fit to have him come on the podcast, talk about his background, and specifically how he and his firm are serving the energy efficiency market today, specifically through a tax incentive program that he outlines and describes how the ESCO market can benefit. But I really loved hearing about David's journey and how the entrepreneurial spirit of helping his dad early on in his career with his business still lives on today in serving David's customers. If you haven't done so already, be sure to subscribe to our channel and consider downloading this episode and future episodes. This is really the only way that we could track how many people are listening. So if you're still streaming the episodes, I urge you to consider downloading this episode instead. And we also ask that you share this with your network and recommend to a friend or a colleague in the industry. Now, we think you're going to enjoy this conversation with David and me, so let's drop in. Hey, everyone. Welcome back to the Building Efficiency Podcast. Today, we're sitting down with David Diaz, who is a managing partner with Walker Reed. David, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Jim. Greatly appreciate you guys inviting us on and having us here to share a little bit about myself and Walker Reed. So,
yeah, of course. Yeah, and I think this is a good opportunity because I know when we connected at NAESCO, I don't think either one of us knew what our companies did. So we spent some time talking with each other and found, hey, you know what? Maybe there's a partnership here. There's an opportunity for us to collaborate. And you know, I'm glad we're getting on and doing the podcast here. So for the audience members out there that may not recognize your name, tell us a little bit about your background, where you grew up, and then just how you got started in your career.
Sure. No, I appreciate it. I'm David Diaz. I'm the managing partner at Walker Reed Strategies, and we're a firm that specializes in energy tax incentives. So for most of you guys may be aware, may not be aware, we primarily do Section 179D tax deductions. We also dabble with Section 48 ITC credit consulting, as well as the 45L, which is a residential energy tax incentive tax credit for residential new homes and buildings as well. 179D is probably our bread and butter. It's the core behind what we do. I mean, for those of you who aren't really familiar with 179D is an incentive that came out back in 2005 to essentially drive more energy efficient projects as part of the Energy Policy Act of 2005. Picked up some legs around 2008 once the IRS actually issued some guidance around how to really take advantage of it. It's unique in the fact that it's available for both private sector and government owned buildings, as well as tax exempt entities. So within the provision, there's the ability to have the tax incentive allocated from the government or tax exempt entity to the designers that are involved with it. So that when we talk about designers, that includes, you know, all your conventional folks you would think of as designers in the industry, your MEP firms, architects, engineers, but really also jumps into the ESCO space and the energy space where, you know, this provision is very much teed up for the ESCOs and energy service providers and performance contractors to take advantage of it and to use it to drive projects. And it's been really, really good. It's been expanded here with as part of the Inflation Reduction Act in 2022, starting with 23 tax year. And it's really taken a big boom. They took it from what was previously $1.80 a square foot max to now potentially being $5 a square foot max plus inflation. In 2024, you're looking at $5.65 per square foot. So it's a pretty big deal right now in the industry.
Okay. So I feel like we got to take a step back for a second, David. I know you're in Boca Raton today, but let's hear a little bit about your background, kind of where'd you grow up? And then, yeah, let's just find out how you got started at Walker Reed Strategies. Tell us a little bit about that story.
Sure. So my background is actually in real estate and construction. I went to FAU, go Owls, which, you know, nobody knew who FAU was when I went to FAU, but now, you know, they have a decent basketball team, or at least last year. So, went to FAU, really grew up in the construction industry, my whole life. My dad was a mechanical engineer, had kind of a, you know, worked for a company, and we were a lower middle class. He had a, you know, a side hustle, we want to call it, where he did, architectural drafting and design for room additions, driveways, you know, porches, you can think of it involved. So, you know, I have a childhood growing up 9-10 years old, you know, sitting over a good old fashioned blueprint machine on a Saturday morning, you know, in the garage and breathing in plenty of ammonia. It's probably where all my hair went, but it was really, you know, so I've grown up in that world. In high school, I actually, you know, started working for my father, and I was doing his sales just because I felt bad for him. He needed to make some money too, right? But I felt bad for him. He was working all day, you know, and then come home, he'd do meetings, and he'd stay up till midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning, drafting, and drawing up these projects he was working on. I said, hey, let me handle the client side of it. I got a car now. And he's like, you don't know what you're doing. You've never sold a job in your life. You don't know what you're going to do. And my mom used to pick up the phone for us. And I really told her, I said, hey, mom, next time somebody calls for an appointment, don't even tell dad about it. Put it on my plate. Let me know. And I'll go out and I'll pitch it. And she did. Mom was always a big, like, you can do anything you're put your mind to, you know, you can be an astronaut, whatever you want to do. That was mom. So she sent me down that path. I went. Sold the job, came back. My dad goes, well, I guess you do know what you're doing. I said, yeah, keep piling them on. I'll take 10% of everything I kill. And that's kind of how my client service and, you know, really business development kind of started. I started selling to a lot of the local general contractors in the area. My dad eventually left his day job, and we kind of took off with that business together. And I got my general contractor's license as soon as I turned 18. And while I was going to college at FAU, I probably built a couple hundred homes. You know, it was a really great time. Probably too good of a time. I didn't realize it at the time. But you're looking, you know, I'm 40 years old at this point. You're talking 2002. The real estate market down here in South Florida was absolutely booming. And you know, everything I touched turned into gold at that point in time until it didn't. And then,
what was that like? Yeah. So you lived right through that 08, 09, you're right in the mix of the real estate crisis there.
Yeah, it was really good. It kind of brought us here. Right. So it was one of those situations where what felt like a tragedy at the time, and everything kind of happens for a reason, you know, I had 15 or so homes that I had on, you know, I couldn't sell. I couldn't get them financed. I couldn't move them. Right. So I had all this inventory, all these bank loans, and, you know, I tried to grind through that. And, right around that time, I had a good buddy of mine who we kind of grew up together. He was, he's a mechanical engineer and, now my business partner. We around that time, we were both in a similar spot. We were really, really struggling. We kind of looked at each other and said, hey, we should do something together. You know, two brains are better than one. And we had no idea what we were going to do together. We started just looking, should we go conventional, you know, design and MEP? Should we, you know, we both had little kids at that point. Should we open up a Java jumping house for the, you know, we were really throwing every idea at the wall. And, you know, you start being mindful about things and something will show up. Right. And we were really just had no, you know, had a complete blank slate. And one day he got a headhunter on LinkedIn, reached out to him. He had put on his profile that he knew how to do energy modeling, and a headhunter reached out and was trying to have someone start a 179D practice at what's now a local competitor of ours. You know, he went, interviewed, really didn't jive with the management there, and kind of told me about it and told me, hey, this is, you know, this is the job that they're looking at. And I was doing work for a couple, commercial contractors at that point, or I'm sorry, commercial developers at that point. And I looked at him and I said, hey, I can go sell one of these studies tomorrow. Why don't we do this? And it was just like that. I kind of, you know, took the back of a napkin, drew up a contract, went and sold
it. The same way you did with your dad.
Yeah. Yeah. I've never been afraid to jump in. So I kind of drew up a contract and went, and we and I pitched it to this guy who I already had a relationship with. And I said, hey, I can get you $1.80 a square foot and tax deductions on this building that I just helped you finish build. And he was like, okay, he signed. And, you know, the rest is kind of history. We spent the next 3 or 4 months figuring out how to do the study because we really had no idea. Right. We had never really dealt in the tax world and the mix of tax and engineering. You know, there's no degree course or no path that kind of combines the two. So it's really a matter of taking your engineering expertise and having the foresight to read through the tax code, properly interpret it. And we spent 3 or 4 months trying to figure it out. Next thing you know, had another client that was a lighting contractor who you know, beat us up and said, hey, if you can, you know, I'm using that local competitor I was trying to hire you. You can do it for half of what they're doing. We'll give you all our work. And we're hungry. We said, sure, we'll do whatever, you know, and that led us into the ESCO space, which, you know, led us into NAESCO, which led us into, you know, the CPA world. And it really snowballed from there.
So doing that deal for half of what your competitor was charging, is that just, you guys like had no overhead, low overhead, just two individuals just hustling and figuring it out.
Absolutely. We're working out of our, you know, it's Florida, so we don't have basements, but, you know, we're working out of our little home offices and we had to figure it out, and we did. And we learned so much. You know, I look at some of those early days and I think, God, I can't believe I said that to a client, or I can't believe I, you know, thought this worked in such a way, you know, but you learn and you live and you kind of experience, and to the point where, you know, now I'm considered one of the renowned subject matter experts on this and on this area. And I'm kind of the go-to for presentations and podcasts and whatnot when it comes to this. So it's, but you know, it took a lot of beating our head against the wall and figuring it out. Cause again, there was no course that I could take. There was no webinar or no online Udemy course I could take to learn this stuff. We had to figure it out on our own.
Yeah. It sounds like a, you know, real, I love talking with entrepreneurs that, you know, the analogy that I think of is like when you first start out, you're building your wings while you're flying, you know, it's like, all right, how are we going to do this? We're up in the air, but we got to figure this thing out. So that's pretty cool. No, thank you for that, that story. All right. So let's go back to really the meat of what you guys do, the 179D. I know you mentioned some other tax deductions there, but, you know, let's say there's a contractor, there's an owner of an ESCO or an energy company that's out there listening to this. And they're like, hey, what was that again? How does this work? Tell us just like in real simplest terms. Don't most people probably aren't accountants or, you know, astute finance people listening to this. So in real simple terms, what does it mean? How does it impact their business in a positive way?
Sure. No, that's a great question. I mean, the 179D is this tax deduction that essentially lowers your company's tax liability. If you're an ESCO or you're an energy company and you're doing work in the tax exempt space or nonprofits, federal, any level of state and local government, you have the ability to have this deduction allocated to you guys for being a designer of these energy efficient property, right? So the intent behind this, Congress wants to drive energy efficiency projects. They created these incentives to you know, motivate the designers to hit certain targets of energy efficiency. And if you do, you can take this tax deduction. So it's really meant to drive more ECMs, drive more projects. Historically, though, it's kind of been a funny, you know, right? Congress has an intent, but that's not necessarily how the marketplace uses it, right? So it's its own fault, right? You've had a program that caught some wings in 2008. And then, you know, by the time there was providers that could do the work, because you need an independent certifier to do that certification, you ended up with about 2 or 3 years of life on the program where it was expiring at the end of 2013. And then ever since 2013, the program has either been expired and then renewed retroactively, or it's never had any longevity or any forward vision behind it. So historically, you know, the folks that knew about it, and we educated, right? We spent lots of our early days just educating people. Nobody knew about this. Hey, how does this work? How can we make it help you and lower your tax liability so that you can drive more projects? And really the intent has always been, hey, there's, you know, $1 million tax deduction. You know, can we throw some of that back towards the project, towards doing more ECMs, doing a phase two? And really, it's never, you know, there's no ESCO project that gets developed in a year. You know, it takes multiple years to develop an ESCO project or a performance contract. You know, some might get done quicker than others, but realistically, by the time you start the process and you get to actually boots on the ground and get construction going, you're looking 2-3 years. And there's not, you know, it never had enough longevity to have that much forward vision. So it never got applied towards, you know, new future work. It was always just a, hey, whatever, if 179D is there when we finish this project, then we're going to try to take advantage of it and lower our tax liability. But it wasn't included in the IGAs or the financials or helping the project pencil now. And, you know, in 2022, the Inflation Reduction Act really changed that. The Inflation Reduction Act adjusted the life, gave it a 10-year life. I mean, it was made permanent in 2021, but nobody really looked at it. You know, there wasn't any hype around it. You know, we tried to put out some information and whatnot, but, you know, it wasn't really much excitement behind it. But once the inflation reduction came out, they adjusted it, bought it up to $5 a square foot. All of a sudden, we saw some major players in the ESCO space come to us and say, hey, we need to develop a program around this and we need to use this to drive more energy efficiency projects. So
I guess you can't be permanent, right? I mean, things always are going to change, but yeah. You know, whoever worked that into the legislation, I mean, that can't be much better for firms like yours, huh?
Yeah. It was strange to make it permanent. And then a year later, they came out and said, okay, now that it has a 10-year life, even though at the end of the 10 years, essentially it reverts back to the, you know, permanent version of the previous 179D. But by then, Congress will do something else with it, I'm sure. Right. And they'll make some other adjustments and whatnot. The key point is that we got some longevity and some vision that we can actually put behind some of this.
Okay. All right. Well, that's a perfect segue to the next section here. I mean, I always like to ask my guests where they see the industry heading. So you're kind of alluding to it there. You're talking about future, talking about vision. Where do you see, maybe we'll take it from like the energy industry as a whole, like where do you see that segment going? And then how does your service tie into that?
Sure. Well, I mean, look, what I've been seeing and where I kind of see the energy projects that are being performed and being done are, you know, coming more and more complex each and every day, right? So we're seeing, you know, the ECMs, the simple ECMs of just lighting or, you know, so just some mechanical improvements, changing boiler here and there, really, you know, to keep driving projects. There's a lot of these projects that I'm looking at for some of these ESCOs. We're looking at phase 8, 9, 10, you know, 15. So they've been in these buildings making improvements constantly. And the improvements are getting not creative, but you're getting more and more complex work being done. So, and you know, as the work gets more complex, the 179D has to go and be able to model that and mirror some of those initiatives. So really where I've seen, you know, applicability with what we do is there's now this desire for a, call it a pre-construction need around 179D, is knowing on the front end of projects, hey, you know, if I take this existing building, combine it with, you know, these ECMs that I'm proposing to do, you know, what will that yield in a 179D 3 or 4 years down the road when this project is done? And how can we work that into the financials of the deal to help it move, you know, move the needle financially? So it's been cool on some of the projects. I've run into some of the bankers that have put these deals together that I didn't even know were acting behind the scenes. And, hey, you're Walker Reed. You guys did the, yeah, deal. That was creative. You know, it helped. Yeah. So there's a lot of that activity, and we're consulting tremendously on the front end of projects now, where historically that hasn't been the case.
Cool. All right. Well, no, that's a good synopsis there. So let's transition to the last part of the show. I wanted to ask you the same 4 questions I ask every guest who comes on, and sure. I wanted to lead off with, David, what are your daily non-negotiables?
My non-negotiables are really, really focused around, getting back to my clients. I have to, you know, we've built the business on doing what we say we're going to do when we say we're going to do it. You know, and that's a non-negotiable for me. It doesn't matter if I'm on vacation, I'm in Europe, I'm that, you know, it doesn't matter. You know, if you reach out, you have a question, I'm going to get you an answer or tell you that I'm going to get you an answer, but you're going to hear from me on a daily basis. So that's a critical part of my everyday.
It's amazing how much that can separate you from your competition when do what you say you're going to do when you're going to do it. Right. Yeah. I mean, that's something that resonates.
It's really that simple. Yeah.
I know. And it sounds really simple, but like, yeah, that can really separate you from everyone else because a lot of people don't do it. Well, that's all right. That's good. So 22-year-old self, you're graduating from FAU probably right around this time. What advice would you give to yourself then?
Really to pick one thing and kind of stick to it, right? You know, it's hard as an entrepreneur and having such an entrepreneurial spirit in mind, you know, everything that looks shiny and glittery, you know, isn't necessarily gold. So it's hard to, you know, if I could do it all over again, I'd say, hey, whatever it is, whether it was once of an ID or energy or general contracting that I was in, whatever it is, pick the one thing, go after it, put all your heart, soul, energy into it, and really just stay focused. Because I spent a lot of my early career years kind of like, ooh, this is moving and we got this set up. Now let's try doing something else. And then, you know, you didn't really put the proper energy or focus into that other activity that you were trying to launch. And, you know, meanwhile, you may have neglected or missed opportunities on the thing that you already spent all that time building and getting to a level where you felt was successful. So that would be my, at least for myself, that would be where I would advise that 22-year-old David.
Yeah. And if there's any aspiring entrepreneurs listening to this, go back and rewind that portion, because that is phenomenal advice right there. All right. So what motivates you? What gets you out of bed in the morning?
Honestly, I kind of enjoy the uncertainty around our industry, right? Our industry's, is uncertain by nature. You know, we have this tax incentive that's there, and Congress could come in tomorrow and you know, change it, make it go away. You know, nobody, I didn't expect the Inflation Reduction Act changes to pop up. And next thing you know, they gave it this boost. And they really boosted the heck out of our 179D business when they killed our 45L business. They didn't kill it, but they really gave it a nice kick in the pants. So, you know, the ability to be able to pivot and move quickly and make adjustments, you know, and I feel like there's always a clock, right? The clock's always ticking. There's a countdown. And, you know, if we don't get this done now, we don't know if it's going to be here tomorrow. So let's go hard. I mean, that really keeps me pretty excited.
Yeah. All right. Well, last question here. What do you want your lasting legacy to be?
I mean, honestly, to me, it's more of a personal thing. I just want to be known as a good, honest guy who loves his family and has worked hard his whole life, had no issues providing assistance and help and advice to folks who needed it. So, that would be my what I would look for and hope that people think of me. So.
All right. Well, David, I think that's a perfect way to wrap up the show here. So thanks for being a guest on the Building Efficiency Podcast.
Yeah. Thanks, Jim. Appreciate it.
All right. All right, there you have it, episode 111 with David Diaz. I hope everyone enjoyed this episode as much as I did. And if you did enjoy it, please be sure to subscribe to our channel wherever you enjoy listening to your favorite podcasts. We hope that you're sharing this with your friends and colleagues as well. And one last thing, if you have any future guests in mind from the industry, please reach out to me. We'd love to hear from you loyal listeners. So until next time, I'm Jim Schaefer, and we'll catch you on the next episode.